Swim check 1, 2. Bike check 1, 2. Run check 1, 2. I think we're ready. Let's try this. Welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck Podcast, a podcast where we explore the sport of triathlon from a variety of perspectives to help beginner triathletes on their journey. I am your host, Mashonda Shines. It's that time again, y'all. It's a new episode of Try Beginner's Luck. Welcome to this edition. I am so excited to be here with y'all. And I am excited to have this guest with me. I met her at Endurance Exchange 2024. And really, it was just an interesting occurrence. She was selling something that said snake and pig. And I was like, what? Snake and what? What is this? So of course, I'm curious. I go over to find out what she was selling, and so happenly it was a pair of goggles, and the goggle brand is called Snake and Pig. And so my curiosity still just was like, I don't get it. Well, we're going to let Casey tell us all about what that means. But Casey is a triathlete. She is from Oregon originally. Her family is from California. She used to be a swim triathlon coach. Now go figure, we'll have to ask her about that. But I probably figure it's because she used to be an amazing swimmer and she has swam all her life, and swimming was the one thing that she could do. And she only thought, I am just a swimmer. Too many guests who feel like they're just swimmers. But then she turned that swimming with an added biking and then running and became the whole triathlete package. She also went to Worlds in Penticton for Aquabike. So she's got some skills, and I am so excited to welcome Miss Casey Arndt to the Try Beginner's Luck Podcast. I was going to do this thing like Arndt is, isn't, yes, but you are here. So thank you. Hey.
Thanks. It's so great to be here.
Do you ever get people doing play on words with your last name?
Oh, yeah, occasionally, but mostly they just say it wrong.
Well, I'm going to say it right.
You did.
I could have said it wrong, but I'm grateful for that. So Casey, swimming is your jam.
With yeah.
So many people not learning or knowing how to swim, how did you get into swimming as a child? Like, was it something that your mom was like, oh, your parents were like, we're going to put you in? Or at some point, is it something that you said you wanted to do? Tell us about your getting into swimming and becoming the amazing swimmer that you are.
It definitely is all up to my mom, because I'm pretty sure I got thrown into some kind of like 70s era above ground pool when I was maybe not even big enough to walk. So my mom did not grow up particularly as a swimmer. She actually learned to swim, I think, at school, which in America, like, that rarely happens. It's super, like, it happens a lot in Europe. People go to the pool and learn to swim at school. But she grew up in the 50s, and they like had borrowed wool swimsuits that they would wear. If you can imagine how horrifying that must be. So yeah, it's all her. She got us swimming early before I was even like a cogent person. I was in swim lessons. I was in swim team when I was 5 or 6. So it was just part of growing up. It was the only sport that I did in the little town of 4,000 people where I grew up in California. And it just was like part of my life every summer.
Yes, it was. And then you went on to swim in college and became not just a swimmer, but you did long distance swimming. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that started at the end of high school. I finally joined like the real swim team that was at the college with the big Olympic sized pool, you know, where you get in at the end, and especially if you're doing backstroke, you're like am I ever gonna get it to the end of this lane? You're just going for 50 meters and it feels so long. And that summer, I had to go to a couple of random swim meets to qualify for this thing called Western Zones. And I swam the mile there and kind of fell in love with long distance freestyle. So I kept doing some of that in my 2 years that I swam at college, but it set me up really nicely for coming back to swimming later. And then getting into the triathlon world.
So fast forward to the triathlon world. Let's talk about your first triathlon and how did you even get started and learn about the sport?
Yeah, so relays have been a big part of my triathlon experience. That was how I did my first triathlon in Chicago in the late 90s. There was a gigantic event called the Mrs. T's Chicago Triathlon, which eventually I think turned into Accenture or something like that. But back in the day, it was Mrs. T's Pierogies had this giant event on the lakefront. And the way that I realized that this thing even existed was that one weekend a year, when I went to the grocery store, there were people walking around with numbers on them. And I didn't know what that was about, but I figured that was something I needed to find out because that looked really cool. For some reason, I thought having numbers on your arms and legs was a neat thing. So I found out about it. There was another graduate student who was actually training for it 1 year. And so I grabbed two of my friends and I lined them out and I said, "Hey, we're doing this thing. We're doing the Olympic distance. I found a girl who could drive me to a master swim practice twice a week so I could get back in swimming shape." And we did this thing and it was a huge event. I think there must have been 40 waves of starting. I mean, it was insanely huge. Now, sadly, my swim got cut in half because it was windy out and the water was crazy. So on the Chicago lakefront, it's just like a giant concrete wall, and then you jump in. So if the water gets really washy, it's just gonna like blow you into this wall. So instead of going down and then back, we just went straight to the finish. So I did all that work and I only got to swim half a mile. But it was a good thing because even though I'd swum a little bit in open water, which is definitely not my thing, grew up in pools. Grew up going to the beach and jumping in the water in the waves, but definitely not swimming in open water. It was really hard to learn to do that in Chicago, where one open water is really cold and I didn't know what I was doing. So I swam an entire half mile with my head out of the water. So that was exhausting.
So you kept your head out because you were scared of what was inside the water, or
No,
just because it was cold?
I don't think I knew that about sighting. I don't think that entered my consciousness. So I didn't know where I was going. I was with probably 200 other flailing people for the first time in my life. So I just kept my head up enough to see.
Wow, so that's interesting. You swam a half a mile with your head above water. What was that feeling like? Did you
Not
have a
good on my
crook in your
neck.
neck? Oh,
Yeah, I
okay. I was
definitely
gonna say,
did. Yeah, I would
wow.
definitely not do that again.
So, what would you tell us about sighting now that you have probably become better at sighting than you were when you first started?
Oh my gosh. My thing that I would say about sighting is don't wait until you're in open water to practice. You should be building that into your swim workouts in the pool all the time so that it becomes second nature. I mean, to this day, I've been doing triathlon since 2007. I'm not going to count that first relay experience as really triathlon. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. It was fun, but I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. But my first for real triathlon was in 2007. So now we're 17 years later, and I still can only sight either right after a breath on my right side. Like I never hooked it up with a left side breath. So you have to know that about yourself. You have to know, do you prefer to sight right after a breath, right before a breath, completely unconnected to a breath. Like, especially when you're starting out, you're gonna have a preference. So you're gonna have to figure it out and get super comfortable with it in the pool, and then super comfortable with it, as comfortable as you can be in open water. Maybe never fully comfortable. Most people are like, it's a love-hate relationship with the open water.
So interesting. I've never thought about my preference. Now I'm going to go swim and be like, let me just consider it, because I don't, let me be clear. I don't enjoy sighting, but I don't think I've ever broken down the art of it. I think when I learned how to swim, or in my triathlon days and taking like different workshops and classes, I learned how to, when I take a breath, like graze up and then put my head back down in the water. So I never connected it to like a sight, because I do bilateral breathing. Wow. I don't know what my sight is. And we
I
all
think
have a
that's
good
fine,
side. Look, we all have a good
right?
side.
You have
What
two
side?
good sides.
You have two good sides. I need to think that. For those of you who are listening, what side is your good side when you're sighting? Questions to ponder. Okay. So, wow. That's a very interesting thing. I'm still kind of thrown by that. So then tell us about your first try experience, if you don't count the quote unquote relay experience, which I absolutely love relays, because that's how I got started. And it's a great way to, for an entry point into doing what you're good at. Like, if you're not good at the swim, you can do the bike and the run. And if you're not good at the bike, you can do the swim run. And if you're not good at the run, you can do the swim and the bike, or do take one of those instances. So for you, what was your next triathlon where you fully did it and you got to go through all of the experiences and emotions?
It was 8 years later. So I got back in swimming shape for that relay. And then almost immediately after that, we moved from Chicago to Oregon. And I started doing some running. I was also riding my very clunky commuter bike to the commuter train, putting it on the train, and then riding it like through downtown Portland and then up this giant hill to where I was a postdoc at the top of this hill at a medical center, because that was the quickest way to get back down that hill in 5 o'clock traffic. So I kind of dabbled in all of the three things. And then in 2007, my husband was working this job that was where he was on call all the time. And there would be days where he would go to work at 4 a.m. and I wouldn't see him. And I got tired of just like sitting in an empty house. And I decided, this is the year. I'm just going to go ahead and not worry about when do I get home. And I'm going to do this triathlon thing. So I found this little pool that was hidden in our campus. I had no idea it was there. There was no one using it. So I could do my swims. I could ride my commuter bike and then do a little more on the weekends and these little short runs. And I bought this book, I don't think I have anymore, but it was something like train for a triathlon in 6 weeks with 4 hours or something. Like, it made it sound really easy. And the guy was a professional triathlete at that when he was writing the book, but he really wrote about what was it like to be a beginner. And he talked about, I love this story where he was doing his very first triathlon and he's like partway through the try and his dad is trying to hand him this glass bottle of apple juice like refuel in the middle of the run. Right? He's like, don't do that. So it was all the things that I didn't know anything about when we were doing that relay, like transitions and out of fuel and sighting, you know, all those things. So I finally put that all together in a sprint, you know, figured out what to wear. I put on some kind of like stretchy elastic shorts over my swimsuit, and that was my thing. And then most of what I remember from the actual race is feeling like my swim went well, and then the helicopter sound of all of those fancy tri bikes just passing me. and passing me and passing me during the bike. Like I went from the front of the pack to the back of the pack by the end of the bike. And that's most of what I remember. But I was hooked. I broke my elbow almost immediately after that. And the first thing I said when I got into PT is like, I want to be able to do another triathlon. She said, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And it just took off from there.
Your story is probably so relatable for people who are strong swimmers, number one. Like you come out of the water first, but then the bike people just like, boom, they go right past you, right? But the stretchy pants that you put on and you had to bike with that. Let's talk about that. 'Cause how did you?
It was just shorts. It wasn't pants, thank goodness. And I figured out as I was like, nothing new on race day, right? Like that's the mantra. You never try anything new on race day. So I did try to go and swim in them and figured out it was better to swim in them than to try to pull them on over wet skin. You cannot pull anything over wet skin. So, I was not gonna bike and run in a swimsuit because I don't know about you, but my thighs would have caught on fire. So I knew I had to have the all that covered up. So that was my plan.
Sorry. So, okay, never mind. Don't mind me. That's something I would say. Like my thighs would be on fire. But
Yeah.
go ahead, please
Literal
tell me.
flames. Yeah, it would have been bad.
So here we are. You had on your shorts, the people were passing by you. I want to talk about this helicopter sound for a minute. I don't think anyone has ever explained it as a helicopter sound. But for me, I love that sound so much. It's like whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And it's like, what is that? And then when they stop pedaling, it's like, I'm not going to try to do it. But it does something like amazing to my body to hear that noise. Tell me about your experience in hearing the helicopter sound. Did it make you scared? Did it make you feel like, yeah, I like this sound? Or did it make you say, man, I want to bike one day with that sound?
I was on this bike that I had to take the knobby tires off of so that it wouldn't be even slower than it already was sitting upright. So, not knowing anything about road bikes, let alone triathlon bikes, I think the first time the guy went past me with the disc wheel, it was a little scary because I'd never experienced that sound before. But after the 100th time, I was over it. And, I've never actually gotten the chance to ride on a tri bike with a disc wheel, so I've never gotten to make it out really cool sound. But I do love it now, for sure.
Yeah, that sound makes it's like music. It lets me know that everything is well on the course. Like I need to hear that sound, and I'm grateful when they pass me because they paid a whole lot more money for their bike than I did, and you deserve to have that kind of sound. So you did your first race. What was the feeling once you finished? Well, let me back up. You did your first race, and right after it, you broke your arm, or did you break your arm or shoulder? I can't remember.
Elbow. Yeah, I was
Elbow.
commuting home and it was a little stop and fall over type accident in traffic, which was a bummer.
I'm so sorry to hear that. My goodness. Were you clipped in by chance?
I actually had those kind of toe cage things on my commuter bike, so I had one foot out, not the other foot, and I fell to the side where the foot was still in and caught myself with my hand and the ball of my elbow like broke off.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Even though that wasn't graphic, I felt it in my stomach because I was like, oh gosh. And I didn't mean to like ask that, but we were just talking on Ask a Coach. It's a segment on YouTube that we have for tri beginners, like as we're getting people to be able to get their questions answered. And we talked about clipping in and how, clipping in toe cages, you have to be careful, but don't put your hand out there to stop yourself because you can break something. And so we're sorry that it happened to you, Casey, but it's an example of how, even if you're just riding regular bikes without being fully clipped in, if you're going to fall, just fall. So that's just a reminder to those of you who are listening, that when you are cycling and you are enclosed or connected to the bike and you're one with the bike and you fall, just be mindful of that. So you went to PT, your PT got you back up and running and swimming and biking. And so what was it like to do your next race?
I don't remember my next sprint, but I remember my first Olympic.
Mm.
I kind of went sprint and then Olympic and then 70.3 in kind of this careful progression. I wanted to be good at each distance before I moved up. And my first Olympic was still in Oregon, but on a different course. So my first triathlon was on the flat course. There were basically two places that we raced in Portland, the flat course by the airport and the really hilly one out by the lake. And I was on the really hilly course for the Olympic, and we went around the sprint course twice, basically. And I remember sitting down with this really nice lunch that they gave us at the end. A lot of race directors don't give you a really nice lunch. This particular race director had like homemade strawberry shortcake after races, which I did not appreciate as much at the time as I should have. But I remember sitting down with this full plate of food with my friends who had come to see me and just looking at it and realizing that there was no way I was going to be able to eat any of it because my insides felt like a disaster. I had worked so hard on that race. So yeah, that's the next thing that I remember is how hard it was to do my first Olympic. But after a while, I got really good at that distance. And then I got wrecked by my first 70.3. But, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. You move up a distance and the first one is really hard.
But I appreciate the progressions that we do get an opportunity to get in this sport. Like a lot of things, you just do it and you get better by getting good at from a technical standpoint. But with this sport, it's like there's so many different combinations on how you can improve and distances you can improve at. And it's inexhaustible almost to say that there's not one way that you can't improve. And so I love that. And so you moved on. Tell us about that, your qualification for Worlds with the Aquabike.
Oh, this was really fun. So I was having some issues with one of my hips, and it was getting difficult to train really hard for both running and cycling. But I figured out if I just picked one, it went better. So Aquabike was seeming like a good option for me. And for the very first time, Worlds was going to have Aquabike. And so a bunch of my friends decided it would be fun if we all went to Miami together to qualify for Worlds and then go to Worlds together. So we did, and it was really fun. Some of them got in somebody's SUV and drove all the way from Austin, Texas to Miami, Florida, which was an incredibly long trip. I flew. I sent my bike ahead by, you know, FedEx or whatever in the bike box. And that was nice to not have to deal with that. And yeah, we all did this race in Miami, which was the flattest course I will ever do. When you looked at the profile of the course, you could see a railroad crossing as elevation. And when you got to the railroad crossing, it literally was 2 feet up and down to go over the railroad crossing. And that showed as a bump on the course. That's how flat this course was. There was wind, but we hauled. It was such a fun ride. The swim was unusual. It was the very first time I've run into the water from a beach start. And the other thing that was unusual about it was that it was Miami. So there were alligators probably in the water, but we were informed that they were probably small and there were a lot of us at a time. So nobody got eaten, but definitely never experienced that before. And so we all managed to qualify, thankfully, which was really nice. That was why we went to Miami. It was like the big qualifying event. I think you had to place in the top 18, and Aquabike was not like a big event. So depending on all of our different age groups, we all got to go, and then we piled onto the airplane with our bike boxes and flew to Canada, and all jammed into one tiny hotel room, four people, four bikes, and four bike boxes. And that was a very interesting experience. But we ate plenty of Tim Hortons and we had a grand old time. That was really fun. My first time really in Canada, and to do it with friends and to be there for 3 or 4 days, just kind of hanging out and eating Tim Hortons in the morning. And then they'd have these great warm-ups before all the events where they put like a pontoon boat out in the middle of the lake. So you could do your kind of swim recon of the course and swim out to this pontoon, and they had espresso that they were serving from the boat, which was really cool. So you just kind of float, drink your espresso, come back to shore, and then get on with your day, come back the next day and do your race. That was really fun. I don't recommend flying internationally with a bike, but I highly recommend traveling internationally with friends to a big event and just having a good time together.
I'm here for that, especially Tim Hortons, which is really, really good. Not so healthy, but it's really, really good. You know, but you're there working out. But the marine life in Miami, like, it's the older I get, the more I just be like, can we just not have the marine life races? Can we just please cancel those and do races where we know we can, you know, we know exactly what's going to be in the body of water? But that's just me. That's just me. So you moved from Portland to Austin area. You got involved at the tri team and local tri area there. And that's where you started coaching in Portland and then really got into it in the Austin area. Tell us about that, because you were specific in saying you were a swim triathlon coach. So tell us about that and what you did as a swim focused triathlon coach. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So there were two things I felt like kind of defined my triathlon coaching time. One was the statement, I hug sweaty people for a living. That was, you know, everybody's always like coming up to you after a race, like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, you know, it's a fine. I hug sweaty people for a living. And then with the swimming, I mean, I think you kind of alluded to this earlier, you know, most people that you meet in triathlon, they are not coming to the sport as swimmers. For the most part, they're coming having ridden a bike as a kid, and, you know, everybody sort of runs at least a little bit, but not everyone grows up knowing how to swim. So there's a lot of triathletes learning to swim for the first time or learning to actually swim well for the first time as they're wanting to take on their first Ironman or just, you know, be more confident in open water swimming. And so with the amount of swim background that I had, and this discovery that I made of Swim Smooth early on when I was getting into triathlon coaching, I just felt like that was something that I could bring that would help to give me a niche as a triathlon coach. So Swim Smooth was something I discovered kind of at the end of when I was in Oregon, and then I managed to go to their first kind of like coach session that they ever had in the US, because these are guys from the UK and Australia, and they flew into Livermore, California, and you could apply to go to this thing. And I was there with, you know, 12 other coaches for 4 or 5 days, and we learned all the ins and outs of how they coach and how they videotape people. So that was one of the things that I offered, was you could either come for a regular swim lesson or you could come do a swim video analysis. And I would video you from four different angles. And then we would sit down at the computer and look at everything just like frame by frame, you know, and then get back in the pool. And I could teach you how to try to, you know, keep your legs up better or have a catch that actually worked right or prevent shoulder pain because of the wrong angles that you were using with where your hand was pulling back or where your elbows were, and so many other technical things that people are doing wrong in the water that just makes swimming even harder than it already has to be.
All right. So I have a lot of questions.
All right.
I love the fact that you say you can do a stronger catch, help prevent shoulder situation. And performing the swim analysis to help them swim better. So I'm going to just, let's break down this part. I've never asked these questions, so I'm going to ask you. Let's talk about the catch. How do you, if you can describe it for us, get the perfect catch?
The perfect catch is somewhat about feel for the water and somewhat about geometry. So, you know, some people don't like the sculling drill, but if you can't move forward doing a simple sculling drill, then it says something about your ability to just figure out how to make the water move the way that you want it to move. You're going to move better through water if you are just pushing water in the direction that it's already supposed to be going. So this is like your basic physics class. If your body is moving forward, it's like the water is moving past you from front to back. So if you're always pushing the water from front to back, you're pushing it in the direction it's already going with respect to which direction you're going. If you're pushing it all kinds of other directions, then you're just making more resistance. So you've got to get the feel for the water where you're pushing on it and it's moving properly instead of just kind of slipping through it. And then the geometry part is, it also relates to what you were talking about, like trying to get away from shoulder pain. When your hand goes into the water right in front of your shoulder, you don't have that crossover, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have the crossover. You're also not super wide. I've seen some people try so hard to avoid crossing over that they end up looking like they're flying, like their hands are way out wide of their shoulders. And then that hand needs to stay in line with your shoulder all the way back. So you're not outward, you're not pushing inward, but you're keeping your hand and pushing straight back toward that same line that your shoulder is in. And that kind of thing is going to help push the most water in the right direction and also hopefully keep you from jacking up your shoulder so that it hurts to swim.
As we talk about the kick now, how important is it for triathletes to kick? Because sometimes, well, let me talk about myself. I can have a lazier kick than I need to. So the first question is, how important is it for triathletes to kick? And the second question is, what are some tips to help triathletes kick better?
So I'm like you, I have an extremely lazy kick. I almost don't kick at all, especially if I'm not trying to go really fast. When I was a little kid, doing 25 yard freestyle, you kick like crazy because you got to get to the other end of the pool really, really fast. When you're trying to survive a mile swim and then go do another 2 hours worth of stuff, you know, the less energy you can use, the better. The problem is, if you don't have amazing body position in the water and your legs are dragging, you are making it harder on yourself. So then you have to ask yourself, what is the trade-off here? How much kick do I need to keep my feet right below the surface? If you're kicking the surface a lot, maybe you're overkicking. Like maybe you could back it off a little bit and see, okay, are my feet still under the surface? I used to tell my swimmers, if you can push your foot up just a little bit more and feel the surface right there, you're good. If you don't, then you need to kick a little bit more, or, you know, put your head down a little bit more, you know, all the various things that we do to get better balance in the water. But my position has always been kick enough, but not too much, because it does use your biggest muscles and you really don't want your quads, glutes, and hamstrings burning up all your oxygen when you could be using that for something else. So I keep on with your lazy kick. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, but we want to do the right thing. And so kicking is important. So always confirm with your coach if you have a coach. And if not,
correct.
If you just need to survive, survive. But we do want you to have a full balanced stroke. Yes. a full balance stroke. You mentioned people used to pass you on the bike, but at some point you got pretty good on the bike. What was that transition of getting better on the bike like for you? And what are some things you did so that you could improve your cycling economy?
Gosh, so many things changed. First of all, I did buy my first road bike pretty quick after that elbow brake was fixed. And I still remember going to the bike shop and trying out a road bike in the parking lot. And with the little skinny tires after those big fat tires that I used to ride on, and how it felt just like ballerina toe slippers, it was just such a neat experience. But when I got my first heart rate monitor, I realized, you know, that my training for the bike was really going to have to change, because I found it really easy to get a very high heart rate running. And I found it very difficult to get a high heart rate on the bike, which, you know, for running, it's a weight bearing sport. So it's easy to drive your heart rate up. On the bike, if you don't have very much leg strength, it's very difficult to drive your heart. So I realized pretty quickly that the bike was going to take some work to get really good at it. But the great thing about the bike is there's a lot of people out there who are riding bikes who are way better at it than me, and they don't mind if I tag along. And this wonderful invention called the bike trainer. So I would say there were three things I did that turned me into a much better cyclist. One was just going and riding with people on weekends who were better than me. I was very fortunate in Portland that the Portland Velo Club had a group ride where the fast groups went out early, and then everybody just kind of left after a few minutes. So if you went out with a group that ended up being too fast for you, all you had to do was just kind of hang back for a few minutes, and the next group would pick you up as they came through. So you were never going to be left behind. You just catch the next group behind you. And I mean, those rides used to wreck me. We'd go out for 30, 40 miles and I'd come home and like sleep all afternoon because I was so tired. And like, I could not possibly eat enough lunch to make up all the calories that I had just burned. So it was an excuse to eat a lot. That really helped. I started doing interval training on my trainer in the morning, on the weekdays. And I also got into the gym and fell in love with the leg press, which I think helped a lot. And then eventually I actually joined a bike racing team. Now, I don't think most people need to do that. I just happened to do it because I thought it would be fun. And that was really challenging, riding with those ladies and then going and actually racing time trials. I had a good time doing that while I did it. It was kind of neat to be able to just go as hard as you want on your bike for like an hour and then just fall over and be done. You know, you don't get to do that in triathlon. That's another thing about relays, is you can really, really just sink your teeth into whichever part of that relay you're doing and just really go all out. So it's fun to do that occasionally.
What was your favorite part about bike racing? Because I love watching. Let me be very clear. I love watching bike races. So what was your favorite part about actually being with the Peloton and riding with time trial bikes?
The time trial was definitely my favorite. What I learned about the other kinds of bike racing is that I kind of don't like it when I have to do what everybody else is doing. I didn't get to choose when to put the big efforts in, because you just have to kind of give chase. When everybody else starts to speed up for a sprint lap, you have to just go. And I'm a little too independent for that. I kind of like doing my own things. So I like the time trial because I could just warm up really hard and then just go all out for as long as I wanted by myself, nobody else around me, and just do my own thing. But I was not very good at the rest of the bike racing. And frankly, the crits where you're in this really tight group with a small circuit and you're just going round and round and round, that was really scary.
Yeah. Did you ever have any challenges with being in crit racing or time trials where people got too close to you and bumping you? And what did you have to do? Did you have to use your elbow to kind of like get them away? Like, what was that like? Because you seem so calm and, you
Yeah.
know, very, you know, very calm. And I've seen those racers and they calm at all. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, what was Casey like in that Peloton?
I was mostly kind of freaked out. But yeah, you start to, you know, it's like anything. There was a period of time around the time that we moved where I wasn't driving very frequently, and when I would get onto the freeway, I was like very aware of the reality that I could die. Like if somebody didn't let me merge, things could go really badly. And then after a few weeks, you kind of get used to it. So it's kind of similar with bike racing. When you first start doing it, you're very aware of all these people around you and how losing your concentration or getting a little bit too close to the person in front of you, or yeah, this little tap on the side could be disastrous and you could all go down in a big heap. And after a while, you kind of get your bearings. And I would have this experience actually driving in the car where I would feel like I was in a Peloton on the freeway with all the other cars that were around me. Like it just had that, I had that experience, was just kind of strange. So I just, it grew on me because I was doing so much of it.
Well, good for you. I'm glad that it
Yeah.
grew on you, and I'm glad that, you know, you did different things to kind of help increase where you were, as it relates to cycling. Now, your run, tell us about your run. How do you feel about running? Is that a thing for you, or you can pass, hard pass on it?
I miss, like, occasionally I'll get injured, and I do miss running. It's the one thing that I can do from my door. And that was really why I started running, because going to the pool is a pain. And, you know, you can't necessarily ride in your neighborhood, depending on where you live. But running is something that I can just go out my front door and just do. And it's always been that way, no matter where I've lived. So it's the easiest form of exercise. And I do miss it when I can't do it. So I'm not good at it. I'm very slow. I don't look good doing it, but I do enjoy it. And it gets me outside. So it's a lot of good things for me.
I love it.
I've tried a little bit of trail running, which again, it's a little scary, like trying not to run my head into branches. And there's a lot to think about. So I have to be a little more focused than when I'm running around on the sidewalk, but I kind of get into that a little bit, but yeah, I do like running as bad as I am at it.
Yeah. And that's the one thing that makes, you know, tries different from like running, where you can just go outside. Like, you don't need any equipment. You just need a pair of shoes and you can go. And so that's one of those struggle points, or I should say pain points. If we could have a magic solution, would be like, how do we make triathlon where it's just pop-up shop, just go, you know? But it's a dream world. We'll keep dreaming about that.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like over time, I've kind of figured out like what needs to be in my bucket. You know, it makes those bike rides way easier to pack for if you just kind of grab your bucket of stuff, you grab your bike and you just go. And that is something that you can work out over time. It does make it a little easier.
I will say I agree with that. I now am a minimalist when packing my bike to go out the house for a ride, because I'm like, before I was taking everything, and you get confused in your car when you're trying to lay all of it out. But you're right. As you improve, you start to get more efficient in the way that you pack. What advice would you have for anyone who is looking to get into triathlon, and how would you encourage them?
I think if you can join a club or a group of people who will kind of take you under their wing, that's always going to be a great thing to do. Because sometimes seeing things and doing things with others is going to be the shortcut to learning how to do it. But I prepared for my first triathlon just with a book that was not one that you would probably even find on Amazon anymore. Like it's probably out of print, but it did help me know that I needed to do some brick workouts. I needed to figure out how to cite. I needed to know what to wear, and I needed to figure all of that out before I showed up on race day, you know? So just giving yourself enough time, like, don't decide you're going to do your first triathlon the Wednesday before the Saturday race and you got to go to Walmart to buy a bike before you get there, you know? Like, just don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, do a little preparing, find some friends. I think a relay is an amazing way to just get a little taste, to do the little, your little piece, and then to be able to watch all the other parts without the pressure of trying to figure out all the things all at once, right? You can kind of watch all the other people doing their transitions and you didn't have to worry about any of that. So that's a great way to preview it, I think.
There it is. Do a relay, learn, grow, then try yourself. Bam. Well, Casey, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. I do want to talk a little bit about how I met you and the goggles that you have, since you are like swimmer extraordinaire. And so Snake and Pig, tell us about Snake and Pig and what you do with them.
Yeah, so Snake and Pig is a little homegrown Austin company. And I mean, if you order a pair of goggles from us, the owner of the company is putting them in the box in his dining room and putting them in his mailbox. Like, it's as homegrown as it gets. And they are pretty unusual. I think we talk to people about how comfortable they are and how they're different. And people are like, okay, sure, they're different, whatever. But until you touch them, and you've had this experience, right, where you kind of squish the gas here, like, oh, there's air in there. Like, this actually is completely different from anything I've seen before. They're really something. So, you know, I think, you know, as triathletes, we're not 12-year-olds in the pool trying to use our Swedish goggles that don't even have any padding on. Like, for little kids who are on swim teams, goggle pain is like a badge of courage. You know, if you're a 45-year-old woman who's got to go to work after master's team, you don't want to spend an hour with pain on your face and then look like somebody hit you in the eye before you show it up in a meeting. You know, you want your goggles to feel good in the water and to not leave a mark on you afterwards. So I think that's why they're so great. And I've just had a really fun time working for this company, you know, talking to so many people about what problems they have with their goggles and what problems these goggles solve, and then just figuring out how to put that on the website and emails and talking to people on social media. So met amazing marathon swimmers, amazing swim runners, and so many triathletes and so many master swimmers of all ages. Just had an email today from a gal who's 73. She says, I live in this tiny town in Arkansas. We don't have a swim store. When I have to buy goggles, I can't go and try them on. I just have to order them and hope they work. And I've got so many pairs of goggles that I can't use. These are great. I love them. And yeah, I just love it when we get messages like that.
And so where can people purchase Snake and Pig? And yes, answer that.
You want to know about the name?
Well, yeah, I have a tendency sometimes, like, I ask a question, but I'm already at the next question in my head. And so that's what happened. And I'm like, slow down, Mashonda. So yes, Snake and Pig, why? Like, how?
Right, why? Yeah, so it's kind of a joke, actually. So the company is owned by a couple, and the woman in the couple was taking this class for fun about the Chinese zodiac, and she learned about, you know, like, this year is the year of the dragon, for example, you know, or it can be year of the pig. I'm a rat. So it turns out that she is a snake and he is a pig. And if you think about the connotations of those two animals, they're not so great, right? So if a woman is a snake, that means she's like cunning and deceptive. Well, she's actually amazing and so nice. And for a man to be a pig, well, I think we all kind of know what that's supposed to mean, and he's so not. So it's kind of this irony of their animals being these kind of terrible things, but the people are so great, and they just thought it would make a cute and memorable name, and then, you know, just be kind of a funny story. So you can read about it on the About Us page on the website if you want to get a little bit more into the details. But yeah, I think it's a It's a definitely a memorable name. Now we play up the pig a lot because triathletes, like you said, they don't like aquatic animals so much, so we don't talk about the snake too much. But yeah, you can find snakeandpig.com on the internet. They're also sold on Amazon, and we do have some retail stores here and there around the country.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Casey. I appreciate you coming to chat with us and tell us a little bit about your journey and allowing people to get to know you while giving us tips about things to do and not to do. So I appreciate that. But we have a little segment called Rapid Fire where we ask you questions about things, and they're random, they're fun, and we have a good time with them. So first question up, favorite music song or favorite song?
Song, let's say, still haven't found what I'm looking for. You too.
Okay. Wetsuit or no wetsuit for the swim?
Either. I do not hate the wetsuit, but I don't need it as a safety blanket.
Okay. Swim, bike, run. Rank them in that order.
Swim, bike, run.
Good one. You talked a lot about, doing the races and going hard as you can so that you can eat. So what's your favorite post-race food once you're able to fully eat?
Oh, good question. I don't know. All my races are in the middle of nowhere. You just kind of have to subsist on whatever's at the race. Gosh, couldn't even tell you. But I won't pass up a good Chipotle burrito. Tons of calories.
Okay. Do you have any pre-race rituals or superstitions?
I always lay out all my stuff as if it's a transition area before I pack it into my bag to make sure I didn't forget socks or my watch or something obvious. So that's definitely a night before ritual. And then when I'm setting up my transition area, I always have like a certain way that I do it. I always use the same towel, ugly, ugly, bright colored, crazy looking towel.
Favorite thing about triathlon overall?
Gosh, so I'm torn. One is it pushes me to my limits to see what I can do. I think that's why I started doing it. Can I do this? Can I do it well? Can I do it longer? But now that I have a triathlon community, which I didn't have when I first started, I'd say it's a lot about being with all the people that I love at the races.
And this is another question that we don't let people leave without answering. And do you pee on the bike or get off and take a proper pee break?
I hold it until the run.
And then
because I would never stop, but I cannot pee on my bike. I haven't even tried.
So you will hold it until
I'm
the
not
run.
Saying I'm opposed to it. I would if I could.
Okay. And so what do you do with it after when you hold it until the run? Do you go in a porta potty or just pee on yourself?
Usually.
Because,
I've done both for sure.
Okay. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is Casey Arndt. We are excited to have her. And thank you so much. Whenever you try beginners like you always win, I am Ashonda and we are out. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to this episode. We need your help so we can continue to try at TBL. So for more information on where you can find and subscribe to this podcast, visit www.trybeginnersluck.com. And don't forget, whenever you try beginner's luck, you always win.